Hey, how's it going, y'all? I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. Welcome to it. I'm live here every weekday from noon to three on the Liberty Radio Network. It's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. That's as good of a tagline as I could come up with. And that's about it. Also, I talk about how much I hate cops a lot on the show, too. Let's see here. That's pretty bad, too. That's really too bad. All right. Well, so, yeah, the guests thing ain't working out so much today. But that's all right, because maybe we can make it more about audience participation. If you guys want to write in or call in or what have you, we could do some of that stuff. So the chat room is at scotthorton.org/chat if you want to join up the chat room. The Twitter feed is at twitter.com/scotthortonshow. And my email is scott@scotthorton.org. And all right. And then I'll give out the phone number in the next segment, but I didn't think to go ahead and get it set up yet. But I'll set it up during the break, and then, yeah, if you want to do that. Also, plus, I got a lot of news to cover. Of course, there's a lot of news to cover. I do have a bunch of invites out. It's not that I didn't try, although I guess I admit I didn't try that hard. But I do have lots of interesting stuff to talk about on the show today as well. So I didn't care if you call or not, because I can talk for 3 hours straight. In fact, being interrupted every 4 minutes for commercials, why? I mean, every 10 minutes for 4 minute commercials. That just interrupts my flow. I could talk for 3 hours every day. Well, I guess you already know that. All day, every day. That's why I turn my mic off. Sometimes my guest stops talking, and then you wonder to yourself, where's Scott? And then what happened was because I turned my mic off so I won't interrupt him. Because I want to talk so bad all the time. I have something to say about every single thing. I bet you sometimes you listen to these interviews and you think, oh man, I know what follow-up question you should ask right there. But then there were too many to choose from. I couldn't interrupt. I had to hold my tongue, and then some follow-ups just don't get followed up because there's too many. But I turn the mic off to force the issue, because otherwise I'll say, yeah, but, over everything that they try to say, and then you'll hate me. I'm already bad enough. The speechifying during the question asking. I'm like an audience member on a C-SPAN show, you know? All right, anyway. But that's all right. I'd like to talk to you guys. But yeah, oh, I was saying I got a ton of news to cover here, man. Oh, I got to remember to talk about the UK-Israel thing. Oh, I have that in there. Yeah. All right. I had some invites out, man. I should have tried harder and invited more people, I guess. That Patrick Coburn is unfailingly generous and polite. I'm sorry, Scott. I just can't do it, he says, virtually every day. Poor guy. I email him virtually every day. And then he says, I'm sorry. I'm just can't do it. But sometimes he can do it. And, well, anyway, I read him every day, or every day he writes something, which is just about every day. I sure hope you guys are keeping track of Patrick Coburn's work as well. And you want the background on the rise of the Islamic State, read his book. I sat down and read it one sitting, no big deal. It took me like 2.5 hours or something to read the whole thing. It's not much of a book. It's, I don't know. It might be a monograph. I think it may be more than a monograph, actually. But it's a small book. And it's really good. You can find it at orbooks.com. What do you mean it's really good? It's Patrick Coburn, the best Western reporter in the Middle East, on the rise of the Islamic State. So you should get that. Last time I interviewed him, that night, I said, that's it. I'm sitting down, I'm reading this book. That was it. I sat down and read it, no problem, one sitting. I mean, I probably got up to get a drink of water one time or something, but that's it. All right. So, yeah, I really do hope you guys will read that. It'll really help inform you about what all happened here. All right. So, lots of top news to cover today. I guess the biggest news headline this morning for our genre here on the show, is an American was killed in Saudi Arabia. And they're saying that maybe it was an Al-Qaeda attack, but nobody really knows. What the hell happened to my tab? I'm going to have to find a new one because I don't know what the hell I did with my Saudi story here. But that is all right. I will just search for Saudi in Google News, and then I will find it. U.S. security contractor shot dead in Riyadh. This is from The Guardian. One killed, another wounded, at a gas station. Drive-by shooting at a gas station. U.S. national was shot dead, another wounded in Saudi Arabia's capital Riyadh on Tuesday, police said. What appeared to be the first killing of a Westerner in years in a gun attack in the kingdom. And by the way, good deal. By the way, the last time Al-Qaeda attacked Americans in Saudi Arabia, they killed a bunch of Saudis too. And their approval rating went from 90-something percent to nothing-something percent. People turned on them immediately. Oh, I don't know. At least that was the propaganda, but I think it was right. I don't remember why exactly which source, but it seemed accurate at the time. That, wow, Saudi public opinion really turned against Al-Qaeda at that point. Collateral damage? You know, they took to that about as kindly as the citizens of Oklahoma took to McVeigh. Collateral damage, huh? They said. And, I mean, obviously the people who are financing them are the ones with the money to financing them. They don't care so much, but I just mean the popular opinion. Maybe that's not right, but that was what they said at the time, and I believed it at the time. I don't remember why, but it must have been a really good source. Right? Either that or I'm a fool. I don't know. Police later shot, well, actually, you know what? I guess the proof's in the pudding, right? Because that was the end of Al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia. They ain't attacked Saudi Arabia since then until this morning. Assuming this has even had anything to do with them at all, which is a huge assumption, which I didn't mean to just leap to right there. But anyway. The attack resulted in the killing of one person and the wounding of another, and it turned out they were of American citizenship, the police agency said. U.S. officials said both victims were working with a private security contractor, Vanel Arabia. The company was working with the Saudi National Guard. Working with them, huh? Police said the attack happened when the two stopped their vehicle at a gas station in an eastern district of the capital. The last reported killings of Westerners by armed assailants in Saudi happened in 2007, when three French nationals were shot dead while camping in the northwest of the country. I don't even remember that. I was thinking of the attacks in, I think, 2004. Saudi is a member of the U.S.-led coalition. No, they're not. Sort of in name. Just enough to help discredit us worse and help discredit them worse. If that's what you mean. Maybe they dropped a couple of bombs. I don't know. The airstrikes. But the motive behind the fatal shooting is not yet known, and an investigation is underway, said the cops there. The assailant who was wounded in the attack and then detained as a Saudi national was born in the United States. The spokesman told Reuters. He added that a third U.S. national, a separate vehicle, witnessed the attack. Really? Now, isn't that interesting? The assailant, the Saudis say, is an American. But is a Saudi national. So, I don't know what they mean by that. Is it their friend, and they're just fighting over beer money? Or is that what they mean to say there? By he's an American? Or when they say born in the United States, it makes it sound like, no, he's a Saudi now, and apparently no obvious connection to these guys? Or what? I'm reading too much into it. I don't know. Does anybody have a better source than the freaking Guardian this morning on this? Anyway. Don't bomb Saudi Arabia or anything. It's just, you know, a thing that happened. I know what people get when you bring up stuff.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, the Scott Horton Show. By the way, yesterday during the show, I completely screwed up, man. Bob Higgs answered the question during the show, and I was supposed to talk about it coming back from one of them breaks. I was going to talk about it, and then I completely friggin' forgot. So there was a question by email that someone had sent, and the question was, hey, man, what about propping up the dollar as a reason for all the wars? Because we have to hold a credible gun to the world's head to force them to use dollars in all of their oil sales. And if they don't, it'll be a major, it'll mount to a major attack on the dollar. It'll be a major threat to dollar hegemony in the world. And all of this kind of thing. Now, I was trying to remember to you guys whether it was Robert Higgs was the one who told me, I don't know so much about that. And how I take Robert Higgs very seriously because he's Robert Higgs. But then, yeah, it turned out I was right about that. Because I emailed him during the show and he emailed me back. If only I can find the email. What the hell happened to it? Here are all my Robert Higgs's, and they all say radio. Did I accidentally delete it? Maybe I accidentally deleted it. No, I'm having a problem with my left-click button is double-clicking on me sometimes, so I ain't ask it to. Jesus. Why does this kind of thing have to happen to me live all the time? Well, I'll look in my sent because I know I sent him a thanks, right? So then it'll be attached to that. There. Hi, Scott. Okay, so again, the question is, does the Empire wage war in order to force the world to denominate their oil sales in dollars so as to prop up the dollar? So the way I asked him was, could you remind me, was it you that explained to me that, one, having oil traded in dollars globally, and two, the threat of that changing, are really not that big of a deal as far as propping up the dollar in the scheme of things. So I didn't really ask the question very clearly, as you can tell, but I wrote it during the middle of the radio show, so that's my excuse. But he answered. Most likely what I said was that it's not a big deal. This is Bob Higgs writing to me here. It's not a big deal in terms of being a major factor in the determination of U.S. defense and foreign policies. It's certainly not the big gorilla in the living room that some people claim it is. So I guess he's not specifically saying this, but I think what I'm reading between the lines here is he's saying what he's not saying is that it doesn't matter or something like that. It's very important. As far as propping up the dollar, oil sales being denominated in dollars is important for the dollar. And he's not contradicting that, at least. But what he is not on board with is the idea that that makes much of a difference in the minds of the people who are actually crafting the foreign policies. And, that's along the lines of what I answered to you yesterday, too, right? Was, I just don't see anywhere, any of the, masters of the universe up there in Washington, D.C., actually, considering this or talking about this or, even knowing about this or thinking that it's a real concern, other than a very few of them. I mean, what would Ron Paul say about this? Ron Paul would say, if you ask them about dollar hegemony and this and that, not just Congress, but even, the people in charge in the executive branch, they would just look at you like a dog been shown a card trick. Huh? As Bill Hicks would say, yeah, yeah, yeah. As Bill Hicks would say. They would go, huh? Dollar? Uh-oh. I don't want to know or try to learn about this. Go away from me, they would say. I don't know. That's not what the generals are thinking about. Although, actually, I don't know. I guess there was a CIA report, a national intelligence estimate about the national debt, the danger of the national debt in America being overextended. Well, it's been a while back. And I don't know if they really understand, you know? Kind of doubt that they do. But anyway. Yeah. So it is right that Saddam had threatened to stop using dollars, but, you know, there's a whole other host of reasons going on. They wanted to get rid of Saddam. There's a whole other host of reasons they wanted to get rid of Gaddafi, too. Most of them Sarkozy's reasons. As well as Osama bin Laden's, you know. But anyway. Let's see. Yeah. All right. So, wow, really? That's funny. What a strange tweet. Someone just tweeted me that cops arrest each other all the time. Oh, I don't know. I think that's only in very exceptional circumstances. They absolutely have to for public relations reasons. Otherwise, no way. 2 weeks paid vacation, man. That's the worst punishment a cop ever gets. The only way a cop gets arrested for committing a crime is if they beat their wife to death off the clock on a Saturday night. Something like that. You know? It's been 16 hours since you were clocked in, Jim. I don't know whether we're going to be able to let this one slide. I don't know. Drop a gun on her. We'll pretend that she was aiming it at you. There's no law that applies to police. Give me a break. Everybody knows that. And another thing here, and this may be a question. Well, no, I'm going to save this for the next segment. I want to talk to you guys about Dar Jamail's new article. Finally came out today on Truth Out. Should be running on antiwar.com here in a minute anyway, if it's not already up there. Dar Jamail and depleted uranium. I'll be talking about that coming up on the show. And if you guys want to call in the show, I guess I could tell you the number to call. It's 512-271-4836. 512-271-4836. And I guess, well, I'll have a question of the day for you on the other side of this break. But otherwise, you can call in about whatever you want to if you want. Yeah, I like doing the phone calls. I think we've had some pretty good luck with that. And also, I've gotten some positive emails from people saying, hey, all right, you're doing phone calls now. I like hearing that. And, you know, it's just better for the show overall. And then also, you know, there's Twitter in the chat room, too. Maybe you're at work. You can't call in. You know, by the way, you don't need a X-Chat or a Chatzilla to download any new program to your boss's computer. You can just go to scotthorton.org/chat in a plain old browser window and join up the IRC Freenode chat thing there if you want. It's hashtag Scott Horton Show. But you can find it right there at scotthorton.org/chat. Just fill out a fake name and a captcha and you're in. That's so quiet. All right, we'll be right back in a sec, y'all. It's the Scott Horton Show, scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about commodity discs from commoditydiscs.com. They're 1 ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the backside. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code commodity disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's commoditydiscs.com. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is the show, The Scott Horton Show. So, yeah, in the chat room, I'm asked, what about libertarians and intellectual property? You guys are 1,000% hardcore on all property rights, except when it comes to intellectual property, now you're 1,000% against it. What gives? Well, the latter because of the former. Can't really own something that can be replicated for free. So, and I admit, it's really hard to win me over on this one. I mean, I'm not for having a government at all. So you couldn't have a government to enforce any intellectual property. But I guess I sort of imagine that, like, I don't know, when it comes to book authorship, that there would be, you know, basically guilds and you know, voluntary associations that would, you know, find ways to exclude and punish those who would plagiarize and, you know, copy someone else's book and put their own name on it, something like that, that there's a need for that kind of thing in a way. So it would have to come about in the marketplace somehow. I'm not really sure. But I had a big argument with Anthony Gregory one night where I tried my best to argue with him, although not that I got any speciality on either side of the argument, but he finally won me over. And I guess what finally did it was he was saying, you know, if some entrepreneur has a bright idea, he wants to put a pizza shop on the corner of this street and that street because it's adjacent to the university there and he wants to make a bunch of money. And then he does so. And then Pizza Hut comes to town and they open up right across the street from him. Then they're jerks, but they're not violating his rights. Right? They stole his idea, but so what? It didn't belong to him, really. Or, you know, once he created it and put it out there into the world and set the precedent that, yeah, you know, you could put a pizza place there, then, blam, he's the one who gave it to Pizza Hut in the first place. They owe him nothing. They're dicks, but they haven't violated his rights. And so you take that exact same principle and just, you know, spread it around. Same difference. And now it's Stephen Kinsella and Jeffrey Tucker, I think, are the two best on this issue. There may be many others. I don't mean to sell anybody else short. But the Austrian School Libertarians have written quite a bit about this. And you can get, guess what, their book for free. Rothbard endorsed the idea of copyrights. Rothbard also hung around with Maoists sometimes. Rothbard, by the time he died, was, you know, to the right of Pat Buchanan. Rothbard was good on some things. Rothbard is great on a lot of things. Anyway, I would encourage you, if you're interested in the idea, I would encourage you to look at Stephen Kinsella's work on all that stuff. I'm way out of my league speaking on the topic, but it is interesting if you're interested in interesting stuff, you know. All right, yeah. All right, so here's the, ask me whatever you want. Join the chat room, send me a tweet, send me an email. I'm at twitter.com/Scott Horton Show. And the phone number is 512-271-4836, 512-271-4836, if you want to call in the show. The question of the day, or for now, or something, is about Darja Mail's article here. It's come out now, the one that we talked about on the show yesterday about depleted uranium in Iraq, and the title is Iraqi Doctors Called Depleted Uranium Use Genocide. You might remember a few weeks back. Oh, what a horrible picture. You might remember a few weeks back, we had Marjorie Cohn on, and she talked about, from the Thomas Jefferson School of Law, and she talked about Israel's massacre in the Gaza Strip, and she called that genocide. And she had some kind of letter of the law. It was basically the only follow-up question I asked her in the whole interview, man. She's just batting 1,000. But, you know, I don't know, man. Genocide, doesn't that mean really an attempt to wipe out an entire kind of person? You know? Not that you necessarily have to pull it off, but I don't know. It's funny, though, because we consider the Holocaust against the Jews and the gypsies and homosexuals and cripples and whoever during World War II at the hands of the Nazis genocide. But we don't really call the war against the Russians genocide, even though, 27 million, 30 million something Slavs died fighting for Mother Russia. Is that not genocide? That sounds about proportional to what happened in Iraq at the hands of the Americans. What do you call it? Look, George Bush did not say, hey, we have a pretext. Let's attempt to exterminate Arabs from the face of the earth. That is not what happened here, okay? No one believes that. Hell, he could have done it. He could have carpet bombed every Arab capital city into oblivion.
and salted their crops and said, now starve and die. And he didn't do that, right? This is not Tamer Lane. He's a son of a bitch, that George W. Bush, and he ruined the entire 21st century from now on. Should be crucified upside down for it. But he didn't really deliberately engage on a campaign of genocide, did he? But then again, he did get 1 million people killed. And he did aid and abet not a ethnic cleansing, but a sectarian cleansing of Sunni Arabs by Shia Arabs with the help of, you know, black and Mexican Americans in the Army and Marine Corps. A few white guys, too, I guess. The white Christian army, no matter how black and brown it is still the white Christian army from North America, isn't it? Came and kicked all the Sunni Arabs out in a civil war that killed 1 million people. And somewhere around 1/2 of those were killed by Americans. Huge numbers of those were killed by Americans. And not only that, but they completely, in smashing minority, fascist, secularist dictatorship, they completely destroyed Iraqi society forever. I mean, right now, in southern Shiistan, it's the Islamic Republic of Iraq. These men regard a woman's smile as a crime, as the Christian Science Monitor instructed us 9 years ago. Muqtada al-Sadr and the Mahdi army, Sistani's men, they're like Iranians with all the Shiite, morality police and crap down there. And that's the successful part of the war, is installing that Shiite group in power. And then, of course, all of Sunnistan has been turned over to the most radical of bin Ladenites now. And the Yazidis, their society's basically smashed. What's left of them are in refugee camps, and a few on the top of Mount Sinjar still, a couple of 10,000 still on the top of Mount Sinjar, not coming down. But that's about it for them. Iraqi Turkmen, they're hiding in refugee camps, or if not camps, whatever. They're refugees somewhere hiding in Kurdistan. Same for all the Christian groups. There were Assyrian and I think Maronite. I don't know. Maronites I know in Syria and in Lebanon. There were Assyrian and Chaldean Christians. That's what they're called. In Iraq, they're all gone. There were Jews. There were about 3,000 or 4,000 Jews that lived in Baghdad. Last I heard, they were down to 8. The rest were had either been killed or had fled. And you think Bill Clinton destroyed Iraqi society by strangling it to death at the death toll of 1 million people, half of them children, during the blockade, the siege of the 1990s. George Bush just topped that with another 1 million people. And then as Dar Jamil documents here, I'm no scientist, man, but this sure seems like it's correct consensus here, that these people are being poisoned by all the depleted uranium. And, you know, as Kelly Vallejos has pointed out time and again, it's not just the depleted uranium. It's just the decades. You can count Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan's Iran-Iraq War too. Just the decades of mortars landing on the Iraqi soil and digging those heavy metals up out of the soil and putting them up in the air. And then, anyway, more about this. More about the use of the term genocide on the other side of this break. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, well, this is my goddamn show here. My beard itches. Hope that's not too loud. All right, y'all. So it's the show. So, you know what? Who could blame an Iraqi for calling it genocide, right? This is a real problem with American society and, well, TV. Blame TV more than anything. Where these people can pretend for a minute that they're going to go and, what, help the people of Iraq? Help protect them from
Omar Baku al-Baghdadi? No. See, America's the guy that dumped all the depleted uranium everywhere. And so here's a few things about depleted uranium. It's depleted. It's what's left over. After you enrich uranium, you take the sweet stuff to go make nuclear bombs out of, or electricity. That's the U-235. That's the sweet stuff. This is the 238. What's left over? Ah, Scott, it's hardly radioactive at all, they say. And yet, it's not. None of the stuff in depleted uranium munitions is 100% pure. It's going to have all kind of different isotopes in it, because they don't care. They're making artillery shells out of it. They're making, maybe artillery shells isn't the right term for it. They're making, yeah, tank rounds, etc. Helicopter rockets with them. And here's the thing. Why do they use depleted uranium? Well, first of all, it's very hard. So it makes great for hitting hard stuff with anti-armor shells, right? But even better than that, the actual molecular latticework of the depleted uranium is laid out in such a way that it is a self-sharpening round. So instead of going flat and dull at the point when it hits armor, it just sharpens it like a pencil. Just gets sharper and sharper as it penetrates the armor. And also, it gets really hot and kind of burns like magnesium. The tiny little pieces of dust that are shaving off are superheated and so will burn and kill any personnel inside the armor that you're hitting. And so you can see why generals like killing enemies with depleted uranium rounds. You don't even need an explosive on the end. You can just hit them with a depleted uranium big old bullet without explosives inside it. And you can kill the hell out of your enemy's tank with one shot each. Boom, 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 boom. Yay, hooray, kill them all. It's a very effective weapon. Very effective weapons technology. But then, of course, as you can tell from just what I described just now, that means that they're leaving depleted uranium dust all over the ground. These self-sharpening rounds. They're leaving the dust all over the place. And I can't tell you, I ain't been to Iraq and taken soil samples and done the measuring myself, but apparently there are, I don't know which different radioactive particles still being emitted from this dust. And destroying the chromosomes of the people of Iraq. I mean, what do you say? What do you call it? That's not genocide. What is it? When, as our friend Dar Jamail reports here, because the women told him themselves, they are too scared to have children. As an alarming number of women are experiencing consecutive miscarriages and infant deaths, with critically deformed and ill newborns. Can you imagine if some other society had come here to America and done this to us? Polluted our land. Polluted our drinking water. Polluted our land. With depleted uranium dust. Such that our women were too afraid to get pregnant because of what horror might come. Wow, geez, I think Americans might resort to terrorist acts. Can you imagine Americans being violent in such circumstances? Well, Osama bin Laden never thought of this. Never could have done it either. This is what America's done to, well, Kosovo first. To Serbia, and now to Iraq. And Afghanistan too, hell. And just littered the places with this. And now here's the deal too. There's every reason to think that people whose bodies are polluted with depleted uranium are sick from the heavy metal poisoning as well as the radioactivity. But when it comes to these birth defects, I mean, it's a nightmare. It's been a long time since I've seen the pictures other than at the top of this article today a little bit. But I'll never forget the pictures I've seen of the deformed children born into the women of Fallujah, Iraq, right now, in this generation. I mean, if there was
any kind of such thing as collective responsibility at all in the way that Americans hold foreigners collectively responsible, then all 300 million of us owe the people of Iraq 110% of our effort till every molecule of this stuff is cleaned up and reparations paid. Now we're going to go be their heroes and save them from ISIS by dropping more depleted uranium on them. It's the wrong thing, man. You're doing the wrong thing, America. And that's something biblical about, by their fruits you shall know them, and by that kind of thing. Boy, the Americans, they talk a good game, and yet everywhere they go, babies come out dying. Everywhere the Americans go, babies die. Oh, but they mean well. Oh, they love us so much. Look, they're sending Karen Hughes and Condoleezza Rice to tell us about the future of women's rights in the region. Oh, they love us so much. Except that everywhere they go, babies die. And who's going to clean this up? And how could they? You need, like, calling all science fiction novelists. Who the hell is going to come up with a way to clean up Iraq from the depleted uranium dust? There's no magnet. There's no 100 million magnets that attract uranium. What are you going to do? This is like when Genghis Khan came and salted and destroyed Mesopotamia back the first time. This is as bad or worse. Isn't it genocide? It's only genocide. Let's see. What if the German Nazis had invaded Iraq and done this to the people of Iraq? Would that have counted? Would that have been a genocide? If they had come and caused a civil war and fought on the majority side in that civil war that got 1 million people killed?
That completely obliterated an entire society, every institution in their society, with the promise that we're going to rebuild and replace it all with something better. That's now led them to a war that's going to last decades, generations, till this works itself out, with or without American participation at this point. Turkey versus Saudi, and both versus Iran, and Iran back in Assad, and Russia back in Hezbollah. Holy crap. America on the side of Iran, but not Assad. In Iraq, but not in Syria. And against our best friend, the Turks. Darja Mail today at truthout.org. Iraqi doctors call depleted uranium use genocide. And who among us are in a position to argue the point? And I don't know about all his numbers here, but I believe him over any American denier, if those are my choices. Cancer, infant mortality, and birth sex ratio in Fallujah, Iraq, 2005 through 9. That was the study by Chris Busby. I interviewed him. You can go back and listen to it from 2009. And Chris Busby, he's the one who talked about how the little pieces of dust, and I don't understand, maybe this is not right, maybe some scientists in the audience can set me straight, sounds plausible enough to me, I don't know. And he's not the government, so I don't necessarily suspect him of being a liar. But he said that the little pieces of uranium dust, not only do they emit alpha particles that'll destroy you, and not only will they give you heavy metal poisoning, but they also serve as little antenna for natural radiation in the atmosphere, enhancing it, enhancing all the background radiation in your life inside your body till it kills you. Does that count as genocide to do that to an entire society, to an entire country? You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. Yeah, thanks you guys for listening. Full archives of all the interviews. Usually it's an interview show, but I just couldn't get anybody to do the dang show today. But full archives of the interviews can be found at scotthorton.org. There's more than 3,500 of them now. Going back to 2003 there at scotthorton.org. And that's all. How many did I say? 3,500? 3,500 interviews now. And they prove that me and my guests, mostly, have been right about everything all along. Especially me. Somebody actually let me know that the first couple of years worth aren't working. Well, I don't know, man. We just, give me some patience and get it worked out here. Got server changes and DNS somethings and wrong folder addresses and God knows what, man. But it's going to get all worked out, though, I think. It's supposed to. All right, well, so yes, it's true. I should have spent that top of the hour segment preparing for what to do in this segment, but no, I didn't. If you want, I don't know, man. Is that really a radio topic? I mean, I'm undecided. I don't really understand. I don't know. I guess I already kind of outlined all the different arguments, so maybe that's a stupid radio question. What's a genocide and what ain't? Sure seems like. I guess if the question is what America did to the people of Iraq mean as hell? Yeah. Yeah, it is really freaking mean. Iraqi doctors called depleted uranium use genocide. That's our friend Dar Jamil at truthout.org. And then, hey, man, has anybody seen this? Here's a question of the day. Has anybody seen, let me know, because I don't think I can watch this. I guess I'll have to watch some of it, right? But has anyone else seen this? Bill Kristol interviewed Dick Cheney for 2 hours. Wow. Bill Kristol interviews Dick Cheney for 2 hours. It's at conversationswithbillkristol.org. I'm going to have to check that out. Cheney on 9/11. It was a life-altering experience, especially for those of us who were in the bunker that day, he says. He's still, even after 14 years, 13 years, he still can't get it through his thick skull that, hey, man, you have to pretend to even notice the survivors of the dead. Dick Cheney. You know who's the real victim in 9/11? Me. Yeah, Dick. We know you think that. I think people play this down because he's so malevolent and dishonest in every other way. But I think people play down the degree to which Dick Cheney's a sniveling little coward who pooped his little pants when the Secret Service grabbed him. He can't, you know what, if you find the book Rumsfeld by Andrew Coburn, I'm pretty sure it's in there, where he just has all of these quotes of Dick Cheney talking about his emotions that day. Like, he just can't get over it. He's PTSD, man. One time, I had to go and hide in the basement because I didn't do my job. For whatever reason. And some bad guys weren't coming after all. Yeah, you know who's the real victim of what happened that day? Not the guy, not all the people who had to choose between burning to death or jumping out the window. Not the people whose bodies were torn to tiny little pieces on impact from jumbo jets crashing into their offices. Or the people who loved them. Nope, it's Dick Cheney.
But of course, I guess we all knew that, right? I mean,
what's the news about that? Dick Cheney. And so that 1% doctrine comes from. It's 99% taking advantage. 1% the sweated cowardice from tiny little Dick Cheney. Especially those of us in the bunker that day. Yeah, how about all the people who didn't have a bunker that day? Got killed to death that day, Dick. Yeah, anyway. Bill Kristol. And you know what's funny about this, too? Is this is how far removed from society these guys are, or maybe I am. But neither of these guys has a yes man who could tell them, hey, listen, I mean, you two are the most horrible people in our society. Everyone hates you two the most. And, you know, if you have anything going for you at all, it's this sort of plausible deniability that, well, you know, there's the government neocons and the Weekly Standard neocons, and they're not necessarily all just one kind of monolithic group of, oh, here's you and your best friend, Dick, huh, Bill? After all this time. And here's what's hilarious, too. And I don't know what all they talk about on the, you know, I haven't seen it yet. But at least going by the chapter headings, none of them are about Iraq. Chapter 1, Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney. So, first Gulf War, Panama. Chapter 2, Gulf War. Chapter 3, from Nixon to Ford. Chapter 4, Ford. Chapter 5, the Reagan years. Chapter 6, 9/11. Chapter 7, threats we face. None of the chapters is called Operation Iraqi Freedom. Operation Noble Cause. Operation, yeah, your kid is dead, but it was for a really good reason, so at least you have that. I'd be very happy to hear if anybody has actually seen this freaking thing. I guess I'll have to watch it, right? I mean, what am I going to do? Oh, view transcripts from this series. Maybe that's the answer to my question. Oh, I got to register. You bastards. Oh, download the PDF. What happens? Will it let me do it? Oh, good. I don't have to watch it. I can read the whole thing. Perfect. Bill Kristol interviews Dick Cheney, the transcript. Gotta tweet that out right now. Interviews Dick Cheney PDF file. Yay. Very good. All right, so what a nightmare. I guess I'll have to go through and queue it up if there are important sound bites I really need to get. He starts out talking about James Baker. This would be interesting, man, right? Has to be. You know, I was talking with a young fan of the show the other day, and I was saying, yeah, just like back in 2005. And he said, 2005? Sorry, that was before my time. And I says to myself, oh my God, you know, this kid, he's a young kid. He's old enough to be interested now, but 2005 to him was ancient history. 2005 to him is like, you know, the summer of love to me, right? It's like a Jimi Hendrix concert to me, before my time, different era. I wasn't yet a baby. Or I guess, no, that's not really right. Maybe, well, see, I don't know. I know the history of the early 80s when I was a kid. He was at least a kid in 2005, this guy. Anyway, point being, I realize now that I'm old, and that's why there are gray hairs on the side of my head and on my chin, and that's why I remember a lot of things that happened for years going back, because I was around all those times, and I'm not complaining, though my back hurts a little more than it used to. I'm not complaining, because it sure beats the alternative, as my old grandpa used to say, back when he was alive. And, so, yeah. I realize a lot of people don't have the background. A lot of people,
And you don't have to have paid attention and read all at antiwar.com every day all this time, but if you were a grown adult during the Clinton years, then you remember it in a way that people who were kids then don't. If you were a grown adult this whole time during the war on terror, then you got maybe wronger, but you've got more information to work with anyway than the young. So sometimes I got to start from the beginning again.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Hey, Fox News. Hey, it's Fox News, but this seemed like a simple point of fact. They say that Kim Jong-un has been seen. Okay. So there you go. This just in, Kim Jong-un has not been shot in the head. I don't know if anybody knows anything more than he's been photographed somewhere. I don't know. That's according to Fox News anyway. I'm trying hard. To watch more Fox News so that I'm more in tune with what, you know, the masses think is right. Because Fox News has far and away the most viewers, which is almost unbelievable to me. The agendas are so transparent. It's amazing that, I mean, not that their competition is any better. I don't know. Anyway, I want it straight from the Pentagon, especially at a time like this with the Iraq War 3 breaking out and everything. So I'm watching Fox. All right. I got a caller on the line. You can call too. 512-271-4836. 512-271-4836. You're on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, Scott. It's Chris in Canada.
Hey, Chris. How are you doing?
Good. Your show queued me up for some memories that I have of a tour that I helped Paul Krugman do here in Canada. He came up to lecture some university students and professors at McMaster back in 2008. His title of his paper was The Potential Collapse of the U.S. Dollar. And we had a difficult time getting him up here with weather and what have you. But after his lecture to a jam-packed hall of enthusiastic supporters and critics, we bundled him into the car to drive him back to the airport, and I had my satellite radio on, and it was just queuing up to the Ludlow and Company, and Paul had done an editorial that morning for the New York Times, his op-ed piece Monday and Fridays. And it was to do with the imminent Great Recession. And so Paul was getting into the driver's seat, putting on his seatbelt. And I did have the radio on. And Kudlow says, coming up on today's show, Krugman calls the 29th U.S. recession not. And Paul was, obviously Paul heard it, and he says, turn that radio off. And I did, and we were sort of all taken aback at the, there were two other professors in getting into the back seat. And he was furious because of obviously his New York Times had is and was read by Kudlow, and he proceeded to really sort of get very angry, introspective, and so the car was quiet for about a good 5 minutes or more, and then he snapped out of it, and he apologized and said that he just absolutely detested Kudlow and thought a lot of his things were inaccurate. And so obviously events did come true. But he also recounted that he had had a run-in with the White House and that he had gotten a call from the New York Times. The young man that took over, I can't remember. He was a nephew or whatever. And he told Paul, would it be possible to tone down the rhetoric in his op-ed pieces? And then, of course, Paul ended the phone call and proceeded to write his resignation letter. And so I guess the uncles caught word of what had happened. And at that time, there was a paywall on the New York Times. And I believe it was over 20 million hits Monday and Fridays. And so it was generating a lot of revenue for the paper at that time. But they, the editorial staff and, all the powers that be at the Times realized there was no way that they could lose Paul. So they, they called him back up and they said, please, please don't go. And, he stayed on, of course, and became a very vocal and spontaneous critic for all the failings of the Bush administration, and continues to be a thorn in the side to all sorts of proponents of war and austerity. So, Paul went on to say that he was quite fortunate because most of his other colleagues that whose bosses received similar calls were all let go, and so there were many journalists and professional writers and people that write opinion pieces that were muzzled by the White House with the simple lifting of a phone receiver and a call to the right people.
Yeah. No, that's an important anecdote. You don't really, it's sort of like, some guy in the army goes, oh man, don't you know that we're stationed in Angola, and tells a whole story you never heard of before, that kind of thing. You get, it's important to hear little stories like that, because otherwise it's not really reported just how often or just how able, the politicians, and not just the White House, but any kind of politician, really, how much power and influence they have over the media and how easily they can marginalize and blackball people, have people demoted or, kicked back down, kicked down to other departments, like what happened to Gary Webb. I remember I used to have a little clipping out of the Austin American Statesman about Gary Webb, the reporter who wrote the Dark Alliance series about the CIA and their cocaine smuggling, has been demoted to covering Hollywood. He will now be the Hollywood beat reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. And then they transfer him to just kind of local politics, something like that. But, they do. They get away with blue bloody murder, man. It's crazy all the time. Thanks very much for the call, Chris. Appreciate it. There's a great clip of Dan Rather there's a way to finish that sentence credibly. There's a clip of Dan Rather explaining to Bill Moyers that these are gigantic corporations that have regulatory needs in Washington. And we all know you don't need a memo that tells you that you can only go so far. It's a very tight leash on what gets reported. It's more effective, really, than under Soviet communism and their propaganda, because it seems independent.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy.
Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome back to the show. Yeah, I brought up Gary Webb there. There's a piece here, Huffington Post. Key figures in CIA crack cocaine scandal begin to come forward. And it includes one of Gary Webb's sources who he named in his book, Dark Alliance, but then she had him take her name out in the paperback version. Baca is her name. She's now talking. And then the guy that wrote the book, I'm sorry, I may be confused. It's either the guy that wrote the book that they made the movie out of, or the guys that made the new documentary that is coming out at the same time as the new movie about Gary Webb, went down to El Salvador, or where was it? I think to El Salvador, and they found Danilio Blandón, who was the guy who was supplying the cocaine to Freeway Ricky Ross, who was supplying the crack to all of Los Angeles. So, yeah, man, they went and found Blandón, and he played down his role or whatever, but he admitted to it too. He says, remember, we were just, whatever, we were running in L.A. It was going to profit the Contra Revolution, he said. It was the documentary filmmaker who tracked him down, Levin. And he says, quote, Gary Webb tried to find me. Congresswoman Maxine Waters tried to find me. Oliver Stone tried to find me. You found me. And so then he says, the big lies that we started it all, the crack epidemic. We were just a small part. There were the Torres brothers, the Colombians, and others. We were just a little marble, pebble, rock, and people are acting like we were a big boulder, he says. I think if you read Gary Webb's book, you'll know better than that. And these guys were the suppliers for Freeway Rick. And I don't think there's much of a question that it was Freeway Rick that changed the entire culture of cocaine use in L.A. I mean, just... yeah, the crack epidemic started with him. Not that he invented it or anything like that. If you read the book, that's not what it says. It just says that this is how it went from bad to completely out of control. And then the consequences, we could spend the rest of every show for the rest of my life and yours talking about the consequences from the government's reaction to the government's created crisis here. But anyway, it is amazing and heroic that this actor, what's the actor's name? You guys know actors' names? What's this? What is it? Jeremy Renner. I read a thing. It said this guy, Jeremy Renner, like, insisted on doing this movie. This is one of these where I guess he had a couple successes or something, and he gets to say, I don't care if this makes money or not. I don't care. Whatever, whatever. We're doing it and made this movie. So, and he's the star of it. And so, that's as heroic almost as the work that Gary Webb did in uncovering the CIA's role in all the cocaine epidemic, crack epidemic in the first place, in bringing this to major theaters. And from the trailer, I don't know if you guys have seen it, from the trailer, it looks great. I guess the movie's already out, isn't it now? Right? Hits theaters on Friday, says this article that was written when? On the 10th. Oh. So, I don't know if that means last Friday or this one. What's it, Tuesday? I guess it comes out this Friday? Anyway. Oh, and then the documentary is called Freeway Crack in the System. And now, someone in the chat room mentioned the suicide. And it was a suspicious suicide on its face that there were two gunshot wounds. But here's the thing about that. The first one just went through his cheek. The second one was the deadly wound. The other thing about that is everyone who knew him knew that he was suicidally depressed. He was losing his house. He had transferred his bank account and his life insurance and whatever and had it all set up. Transferred his bank account over to his wife, had his life insurance set. He was losing the house. Then some bastard stole his motorcycle, was his last way of getting around. And that was it. He did it with his father's gun. And I read his son saying just the other day that he had fired that gun before. And for a little pistol, I don't know if it was a pistol or a handgun. I guess, I don't know. It was some kind of double action where the kid says, once you pull that trigger, it was almost, you know, kind of de facto automatic or semi-automatic in a way. It would just bounce and shoot and shoot and shoot. Very, very easy trigger on that gun. He'd shot it 100 times himself. Here's Gary Webb's son, not the slightest bit concerned or suspicious about the fate of his father. There's his own handwriting on the suicide note on the door. Do not come in. Call 911. And all this kind of thing. But still, the CIA's guilty. Deutsch and then, you know, whoever was after him after he got fired for downloading porn, bringing documents home, and whatever it was that he really did. You know, whoever came after him and all of them who worked for them, everyone in CIA had anything to do with organizing the hit job on Gary Webb, which is a lot of people. They all murdered him. They all absolutely murdered him. You know, I still feel bad to this day. It's 10 years gone now. I interviewed Gary Webb one time and I always meant to follow up with him. I'd scheduled the interview and I couldn't get the entire book read. It's so huge and so full of detail, and I got about half of it read, and I finished the book after I talked to him. But then I never got a chance to get him on again. And I emailed back and forth with him a few times, and then he died. His website went dark for a little while. What's up with that? And I was talking with other people, were asking me, can you get a hold of Gary Webb? Couldn't get a hold of him. And then later he died. Somebody saved and archived his website, though. All that material still exists. His entire, and it was an awesome website, especially for back then. But anyway, the point is, what I felt really bad about was when I had him on the show in 2004, I think. It could have been 2003. I said to him, geez, you did all this great work and all you got was destroyed over it. And I don't know if it was bad delivery or just because of how bad he felt, but he didn't laugh. He just was like, yep. And I thought, you know, shit, I just assumed that he was over it because, hey, what are you going to do, man? You cross the CIA, you know they're going to destroy you, but whatever, you're still breathing. I don't know. I don't understand depression very well, I guess. I don't have it. But anyway, he didn't think that was funny. And he didn't get mad at me for it, but he did not laugh. And I always felt kind of bad about that. That, like, I shouldn't have said it all, or boy, I should have, like, hit my da-dunch at the end a lot. I should have got my punchline better and made it funny. Made it ironical or whatever, better than I did. But anyway, he was a great reporter, and his work was great. And all the attacks on him are a bunch of crap, dude. All the attacks on him, you know, people try to give the attacks credibility. You know, as I remember it, the only thing that was actually wrong was something that was, like, written in a caption by an editor. You know, or like, a superimposed, like, pull quote that kind of came out of context or something that wasn't his fault at all. There was nothing. They had nothing on his reporting at all. And you read the book Dark Alliance, nobody challenges that. Show me where anyone went and debunked the book Dark Alliance. Get the F out of here. And you know what? Here's the thing about it. He didn't even come out with this till 1996 or something. And when I was a kid, everybody knew that Ronald Reagan was a cocaine dealer. Everyone knew that. You don't know that? That Ronald Reagan was a cocaine dealer? What, are you stupid? You don't think that the death squads down in South America were selling cocaine to Americans all through the 1980s? Where do you think it was coming from? Gee, I guess all the federal police, all the king's horses, and all the king's men have no idea where all this cocaine is coming from. 0% of which is produced in the United States. Zero. None. Oh, they got no idea, but surely it's got nothing to do with their death squads. Jesus. And I'm a white boy from the suburbs, man. From the land of no controversy. Okay? I didn't come up rough where, you know, my cousin was, he slit throats in the drug war for Ronald Reagan down there. No, nothing like that. Although I guess I did meet people like that from time to time. But come on, man. And it turned out it was Robert Perry, our friend from Consortium News, former friend, who was the guy who really broke it in the first place for the AP back, you know, when I was in fourth grade. Everybody knows Ronald Reagan's a drug dealer. While his wife's crying, just say no. With Arnold from Different Strokes on TV.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first. And just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. So, the Iraq War, man. I guess they're saying there's one more base west of Baghdad waiting to fall. And then there's the airport. Now, so, I don't know, man. I don't know. Kind of shrug, not sure. But I don't think that ISIS can, you know, march to the green zone and take it. But could they take over the Baghdad airport? Which is actually west of town out there, what, 15 or 30 miles? I forget now. Outside of town? They might could, and that's the last way out. Sorry, I'm tweeting something live on the dang show. I shouldn't be, but go ahead and do that anyway. Here we go. All I'm tweeting is join up the chat room, man. ScottHorton.org/chat. Got a great chat room today. Hey, everybody. Karzai's brother, at drug money, CIA drug money, in the Afghan war. Sorry, I'll get back to Iraq in a second. We were talking about drugs, and in the chat room, we're still talking about drugs and the CIA. In 2009, Obama was sick and tired of Karzai and wanted rid of him and wanted to replace him with Abdullah, who's now the chief executive co-president. But anyway, they're trying to get rid of Karzai back in 2009. He ended up rigging the election better than they could rig it and so stole his election and stayed. But part of their effort to discredit him was they put it on the front page of the New York Times that Hamid Karzai's brother is a heroin dealer who works for the CIA. Pardon? And the article was bylined by the CIA. I mean, it was so obvious. It wasn't some kind of like hard-worked secret source expose. It was a very official, hey, New York Times, this is CIA calling, and we would like for you to run an article smearing Waleed Karzai as a CIA agent and drug dealer, please. And they said, okay. And so they ran it. I mean, that was basically the article. Read it yourself and tell me I got it out of context. And so, they didn't see that there was any problem in admitting that because who cares, right? Maybe they were gambling that Afghans would care. But they certainly didn't care that Americans would see that as meaning anything. Now, a big part of why Ronald Reagan sold so much cocaine to Americans in the 1980s was because Congress said you can't have any more money to fund the death squads hacking little children to death with machetes in El Salvador and Nicaragua because they're evil. And we're not doing it no more. And so, I don't know, was it that they were evil? What was Boland's problem anyway? They passed the Boland Amendment, which said no more money for you, Ronald Reagan, for this. So Ronald Reagan decided, and his government decided, well, we can do whatever we want. And we'll just raise money selling guns and selling drugs and, hell, selling missiles to the Ayatollah. We'll have the Israelis help us. And then we'll fund our death squads however we want. This is what became the Iran-Contra scandal. But now, there's a blank check for the entire national security state. They can just reach their hand into the treasury and take whatever they want. There's no restriction from Congress on one dime being spent on killing people anywhere. So, I don't think you have as much institutional drug dealing, or at least, that's a stupid conclusion. You don't have as much obvious incentive for the CIA to maintain such institutions right now. I mean, I guess they're useful for liquid cash money for this and that, these and those purposes. People always recommend Peter Dale Scott, and I'll have you know that, I never get around to reading his damn books, but I should. But I'll also have you know that he's one of the reasons that I knew about government drug dealing when I was a kid, long before Gary Webb. He's in, let's see, cover up behind Iran-Contra, and also the Panama Deception, I think both of which are narrated by Elizabeth Montgomery from Bewitched. And he was interviewed, I think, isn't he in The Secret Government by Bill Moyers? Isn't he interviewed in that? And he was, you know, when I was a kid and first exposed to kind of more liberal and left-wing conspiracy theory type literature, sort of propaganda, Peter Dale Scott was one of the reasons I found it credible. When this guy's saying that Ronald Reagan's selling cocaine, he's not blowing smoke. He knows what he's talking about. Listen to him. And I really should, hell, he made a big impression on me back when I was a kid. I really should stay loyal to, keeping up with his books. A friend gave me his book on 9/11. See, I read some articles by him about 9/11, and I thought to myself, what in the world are you talking about? Like, it's all over the place. Just so poorly edited that I just, you lost me. I got bored too long, didn't read. But I should read the book on it, see if maybe there's some better stuff in there. I don't know. But, yeah. In Afghanistan, they're producing more opium than ever. It's a record crop year after year after year. It's record after record after record. No exceptions I've heard of, anyway. I don't know. Maybe it fluctuates a little bit. But where's all this heroin going? Where's all this opium going? To the world medical market? Who's buying it? Who's trafficking in it? And how much does that opium market have to do with the continued occupation over there? Who knows, man? I don't know. And who knows is a serious question, not a rhetorical one. If there's a great German writer who's covered this, where's all the Afghan heroin money going? Clue me in. Show me where I can get the translation. I want to know about it. Who is really good on Afghan heroin? Is Peter Dale Scott really good on Afghan heroin? Legalize it, man. That's the solution to the whole thing if you think it's a problem. Clearly it is. I'll just wrap this up real quick before this break. We'll be back in the next hour, I promise. I got lots of Iraq news to cover for you, Israel news to cover, Yemen, very important stuff. But just to wrap up this segment, someone on Twitter asked a question about libertarianism and religion. And, yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, for me, I don't believe in stuff, but I don't see it as unlibertarian to believe in stuff. And especially if you're an atheist and you don't believe there really is a God and somebody else wants to be, you know, loyal to what you consider to be their own imagination, then they're being loyal only to themselves at that point anyway, right? In a way, kind of thing. I don't know. For me, religious belief and libertarianism, the only thing they really have to do with each other is that libertarianism, of course, respects the sanctity of every human being. And, of course, including their mind and their conscience to believe whatever they want. And that's the only real thing that it has to do with it. I think that because of Ayn Rand, atheism gets mixed up with libertarianism a little bit, in a way. But not really, because who even reads Ayn Rand or knows about that or cares about that? Not me, I don't know. That's never had anything to do with my libertarianism. But, I mean, I agree with her, in fact, on atheism. But, I just don't have a point to make about it, really, you know? I don't see my lack of faith as necessarily having anything to do with my libertarianism, really. But I'm not much of a philosopher, man. I mostly just hate the government because they're evil criminals. When it comes to all these nuts and bolts, you should ask smarter people what they think, because I don't really sit around meditating about these kind of issues so much. I guess mostly, yeah, I just believe everybody else owns themselves and so they can believe whatever religion they want. Doesn't make any of them more credible than any other to me. Hope nobody chops my head off for saying so. That's the way I see it. All right. Well, in hell, I guess I got 30 seconds. I should come up with something else cool to say. Oh, I know what it is. This is what I'll say. I mentioned earlier on Twitter this article: Mideast crisis widens as Turkey bombs Kurdish militants. Turkey does not attack ISIS; they attack Kurds. Well, which ones? Not the Kurdish rebels in Kobane, but PKK Kurdish rebels in Turkey. But certainly that means the ceasefire is off. Certainly that means I wish Patrick Coburn was on the show today. But a friend of the show who's living in Turkey promised me an email explaining what the hell is going on. So we can all look forward to that. Maybe. Probably. Back in 9 minutes. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. I want to tell you about this great new book, Livin' La Vida Baroka, American Culture in an Age of Imperial Orthodoxies by Thomas Harrington. While he comes from the left, Harrington has little time for much of what is passed off under that label today. Like us libertarians, he puts peace and freedom first. The book's got great essays on American fascism, empire, the Israeli occupation, the left and Obama, liberalism in the state, and some interesting lessons from the history of Imperial Spain. Livin' La Vida Baroka by Thomas Harrington. Check it out at scotthorton.org/books or scotthorton.org/Amazon. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And more about our allies in the Iraq War, Iraq War 3, Iraq, Syria, Islamic Caliphate War. Is there a damn name for this war yet, or what? Operation Still At It. Iraq, evidence of war crimes by government-backed Shia militia. That's right. Our allies, they're just like ISIS, only on the other side. This is Amnesty International, and you know what? Disclaimer, these guys are run by some pretty compromised types. And, for example, there's nobody who cheerled for the war in Libya more than Amnesty International. They're corrupt. On the other hand, I'm sure there's good people, you know, doing research and working for them and writing for them. So I don't know. But, yeah, you know, I don't know. They're good on some things. And then, yeah, I don't know. You know what? I don't know how seriously to take Amnesty International. How about this? How about, never mind this report, because I don't really believe them, actually, now that I think about it. But I absolutely accept their premise as true. I already know this. Dar Jamail has reported this. Patrick Coburn has reported this. The Sunnis that are still left in Baghdad, they're under fire. Dar Jamail said they're as terrified as they were in the worst days of 2006. People are dying. The Shiite militias are consolidating their territory, and they are brutal, torture, murderer, sons of bitches. And you don't need Amnesty International, who lied you into war with Libya, to tell you that. And who knows what all crimes... See, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I just read something really bad about Amnesty recently. Or was it Human Rights Watch? Which of them is more compromised by the State Department? I think maybe it's Human Rights Watch is more compromised by the State Department, which was too bad, because I always thought that they were a little bit less imperial lackey than Amnesty. I don't know. What are you going to do, man? You can't have groups like that without them being co-opted by the Empire one way or the other. But anyway, it just goes to show there's no one to ally with here. Why does America care about saving the Iraqi government anyway? So they can fight ISIS for us? That's not it. We're fighting ISIS for them. But just because George Bush decided the Dawa Party should rule, because George Bush and the Ayatollah Sistani... And, what's his first name? Soleimani, the leader of, the Iranian Quds Force. Just because they decided on the Dawa Party and Nouri al-Maliki doesn't mean Obama should have to be bound by that. Why should America be on Iran's side in this war? After all, we're on Turkey's and Saudi's side against Iran. But we're for Iran in Iraq, we're still against them in Syria. We're for Turkey, who's for ISIS, and against Assad in Syria. So why the hell? You could take it the other way. America's natural ally here is Iran. We're backing their guys in Iraq, have been since 2003. So maybe we should invade Saudi and Turkey for them. And maybe we should nuke Raqqa for Assad.
I'm just looking for a little consistency in the policy here. They overthrew the democratically elected yet bearded moderate Islamist in Egypt. Reinstalled the chest full of phony medals, sock puppet, military, secular military dictatorship there.
In Syria, they backed the suicide bombers. Kinda. They're trying to figure out how to split the difference and back and fight the suicide bombers at the same time. Remember when they bombed the al-Nusra front because, according to them, some of the members, and in fact they admitted later it was overblown, but still, there were some members of the al-Nusra front, aka al-Qaeda, in Syria, that were plotting attacks on the West, so they bombed them. But then when they bombed them, they made up a new name, Khorasan. Kinda to tell you, oh look everyone, a headline, we have to have a war now because of this new scary thing. And it's hard to admit to the Americans that, yeah, it's Al-Qaeda in Syria that we've been telling you are the good guys all along here, who are the ones plotting the attacks on us. So no, it's the Khorasan group, and then also as Roy Gutman reported, they didn't want to offend the local Sunni, rebel sympathetic population in Syria by outright saying, yes, we are bombing ISIS and Nusra because they are equally our enemy. No. Even though al-Nusra is actually al-Qaeda in Syria and sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York, they would rather wage war on ISIS and spin al-Nusra. Even when they attack it. As though, as Marcy Wheeler was pointing out on Twitter, you think that the people of Syria are reading AP and they're deciding whether or not they've been bombed or not based on what it says in the AP? Are they going to judge what's happening in their own communities based on what the AP says? Huh? I don't know. Just because it doesn't make sense doesn't mean it ain't the reason why they did it. Yeah. But, so, here's the thing. Back to Anbar province. As I meant to talk about earlier. What happens if the airport falls? Then I guess it's straight roof of Saigon moment for the Baghdad embassy at that point. Because the airport is their evacuation route. And how long can Obama go on bombing these guys from the air and losing the war before he has to escalate it? How can he say, I'm not saying he should escalate it in any way ever. I don't care what red line anyone drew. It's all horrible. But I'm just saying, how long can we expect him to resist escalation when he himself says there will not be a safe haven for terrorists in Iraq? I mean, what are you talking about, man? They rule all of North and Western Iraq. 4, 5, 6 major cities, along with eastern Syria. You won't let there be a safe haven for them. You and what army won't let them have a safe haven there? And now, as Mitchell Prothero is reporting, they're flying their helicopters from the Iraqi Baghdad airport there to try to keep these guys at bay. Which means, of course, flying Apaches means putting Apache pilots at risk, which means putting Apache pilots at risk, rescue mission personnel at risk too, which means a whole other level of escalation of this war. The reason those helicopters are there is to prevent the fall of the airport. Can they prevent the fall of the airport with just helicopters? I don't know. I mean, I guess they can. Apaches can kill the hell out of things, right? But what happens if they bring a few shoulder-fired missiles with them? And where the hell's the anti-war movement here when the war's only just getting started, man? All they've got is special forces at this point. CIA and special forces. We need huge marches We need something. Because according to the government script, this is only going to get worse and worse and worse from here. The Islamic State keeps winning. And the longer they keep winning, the more John McCain and others cry the ground troops are necessary. And John McCain, he's kind of like General Patton, right? He wants to fight Hitler and then turn on Stalin immediately. Go after him too. That's John McCain's thing. He wants to attack the Islamic State and ISIS, and Assad at the same time. And Iran. And hell, I guess you could probably convince him to want to bomb Saudi Arabia if you had the Israelis tell him to think that for a minute. Iraq, the tactical pivot. Saudi Arabia, the strategic pivot. Egypt, the prize. Right, Senator?
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Coming up, the cops and the Israelis. For now, more Iraq War 3 news for you here. So they did lose the base. I'm losing track. They lost the base. ISIS continues to make gains in Iraq's western Anbar province with the military base outside the city of Hit, the latest to fall to an ISIS advance and costing them one of the last such bases in the province. Early reports of heavy fighting at the Hit base were replaced with reports that the Iraqi ground troops had abandoned the base, though it seems that, as usual, they were losing the fighting. The next target for ISIS in the province seems to be the Ain al-Assad base on the outskirts of Haditha. This base is said to be surrounded as well, with the fall of that base giving ISIS a straight shot at the important Haditha dam. Anbar officials say they believe ISIS currently controls about 80% of the province, which is Iraq's largest. The rest of the territory, however, is not under the Iraqi government's control, by and large, and is just contested. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And by the way, I mean, in just land area, a lot of that is empty sand, absolutely worthless desert with nothing there at all. But still, it is the biggest province in Iraq. It's a huge part of it. And anyway, so they keep going. There's that. And then there's this great article. I emailed the guy. I was hoping to get him on the show. Do you guys know of John Batchelor? Apparently he's a radio show host from New York. And he's got this piece in Al Jazeera, America.aljazeera.com. Chechens lead the way in ISIL war for dominance. It's a very interesting article here about the Chechens fighting with the Islamic State, helping to lead it, about how they can't go home again. Not really. So, you know, they make for great leadership because they lead from the very front in a very real way. And they've been playing a major part in the attack on Kobani. And there was a suicide bombing back in Chechnya just the other day, which was quite successful. I forgot the exact numbers of it. But the guy, killed 5, wounded 12 in an attack on a concert that was celebrating Grozny City Day and the birthday of the Chechen president. Yeah, you know, this is something that we talked about back a couple of years ago even. How ironic it was that there were Chechen and even Afghan and Pakistani Taliban fighters who were traveling to Syria to fight. And here, these are guys, the Afghan and Pakistani Taliban, who are America's avowed enemies, that who are actually killing the Afghan Taliban anyway, actually killing Americans who are still occupying Afghanistan. But those of them who can't take the heat or are sick of fighting the Americans, they go off to Syria. They can fight on the same side as us. And this went on for years. People from all over the place, Islamists, whoever wants to chip in with al-Nusra and or the Islamic State fight, which split off from ISIS split off from al-Nusra about, a year and 3 months ago, the spring of 2013. Well, it took a little while. There was a bit of a push and pull there. But anyway. So more and more Chechens are fighting in this thing. And then, you know, he goes on to really talk about Turkey. And here he, let me play the clip for you in case you didn't hear it. Hope I don't have any loud tabs open right now. In case you didn't hear it, let me play these clips of Joe Biden for you real quick. Biden, Turkey 1. What happened? Oh, Flash player crashed and so killed all audio on my entire computer. Is that it? Okay, thanks a lot. Great. Never mind. Anyway, so Joe Biden blamed Turkey for helping al-Nusra all this time. And he walked it back, but he wasn't wrong. No one said he was wrong. He just apologized for offending the leader of America's satellite there. And then later to the UAE guys too, whatever. But what he was doing was telling the truth, and I think kind of, you know, pretending like America wasn't in on it all along, but I don't know. Maybe that is overstated, like Prothero says, but Biden correctly said that, hey, look, all of our allies in the region have been supporting ISIS because they hate Assad, and they've been willing to back anyone willing to fight him, which does include some of the baddest bad guys like al-Nusra, etc. Yeah. So nothing was wrong with that other than that he said it because he's Joe Biden and he says things that he's not supposed to say. That's kind of a thing of his. This author here, John Batchelor, says Erdogan supports ISIL and its kindred Jabhat al-Nusra in order to weaken the Assad regime and its sponsor Tehran and to advance Turkey's regional hegemony. This is Turkey versus Iran in a pure power clash. Erdogan also supports ISIL because it's crushing the Kurds and making it easier for Turkey to deny them their longed-for statehood. At Kobani, while Turkey is claiming it will lend a hand, it is in fact standing back and letting the Chechens lead the fight against the YPG. The Kurds, enraged at the Turkish intrigue, have started deadly clashes with Turkish authorities in southeast Turkey. Finally, Erdogan is also using his support for ISIL and Jabhat al-Nusra as a way of promoting Turkey's superiority over Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, especially Qatar, as intended leader of the Sunni world and for the revival of Ottoman dominance. Yeah, that might be a little overwrought, but then again, who could deny that the aims and goals of the Erdogan government are overwrought? And it's interesting there where you have the Turks and the Saudis on the same side here. They're certainly on the other side in Egypt, where Turkey supported the Muslim Brotherhood and the Saudis hated their guts. And even though they hate Assad and hate Iran together, you could see, I don't know enough about it, but you could see what he means about, their contest between the Turks and the Saudis for the dominant position among the Sunni states in the region. But of course, the Turks are Turks and not Arabs. So there's an ethnic difference there, even though they're all Sunnis. There's an ethnic difference with the Kurds as well. You see how well Sunni Islam helps them paper over those differences with the Kurdish population inside Turkey, in Syria, in Iraq. We're actually, you know, it's crazy too that, I don't know what all is the motivation here, but from what I understand, the Turkish government has had a pretty good ceasefire with the PKK rebels for a long time. They're the communist, secessionist, terrorist types. And, their leader is now saying that if Kobani falls and the Turks don't help the Kurds keep Kobani, then that's the end of all negotiations. There have been major demonstrations all across Turkey. The Kurds are so pissed that the Turks aren't doing anything about what ISIS is doing on the other side of the border there. When the YPG is just the
basically the Syrian version of the PKK, you know? It's all the same thing, the Kurdish Workers' Party. And what about Erdogan's relationship with the Iraqi Kurds now, Dash, too?
Hey, Al Scott here for Whole Food Multicomplete at WholeFoodComplete.com. Whole Food Multicomplete is an entire supplement program in one bottle, containing 100% RDA of vitamins and minerals, plus live probiotics, digestive enzymes, antioxidant herbs, energy nutrients, and more. It's made in America using real foods and live probiotics, no chemical synthetics. It's soy-free, gluten-free, and independently tested and verified. They're so sure you'll love it, they're taking 20% off your first order with coupon code Scott Horton. Satisfaction is guaranteed at WholeFoodComplete.com.
All right, well, Greg Palast, call your office. Saudis are dumping the price of oil. Oh, thank God. For me. They're not doing it because they like me or you. Give us the slightest break. No, they're trying to bankrupt the development of new and more expensive oil resources here in North America. That's what they're doing. So, and that's how they do it. Jerk everybody around. Charge as much as they can most of the time. But when the price is so high, that alternative, corporations start pursuing alternative, resources or, you know, opportunities in such a way that they think might be threatening over long term, well, then they just dump the price of oil back down again, drive all those people out of business, make them have to start over again in a few years. If they can. I don't know if they can do it this time. I don't know how low they can get it. But, boy, this sure is nice. Think how horrible this sounds, old me. It's nice to have gas at $2.90-something. How horrible is that? And that's the best I've seen it. I don't even think I've gotten gas at $2.90-something. I think I just saw it somewhere like that. Anyway, hopefully, for our consumer end purposes at least, we'll have a little bit of a break in gas prices due to this global war of tyrants, sock puppets and satellites and their various relationships. Tar sands ruined. Suncor stock in free fall up there, it says in the chat room now. So that really could be something. Alright. Now, the cops. I see Rayford, our friend, the former cop who's now an anarchist, has joined up the chat room. Just in time for me to talk about the cops. Hey, Rayford, how are you, man? Two killed when Tennessee cop turns off his siren and lights, speeds through intersection. Guess who wasn't included among the two dead? That's right, the one what did it. Killing a 63-year-old man, Danny Floyd, and his passenger, Michelle Sloyan, 49. The officer was placed on sick leave with minor injuries, with pay they didn't even need to add, of course. Hey, just because he was breaking the law, just because he is guilty as hell, not presumed innocent, on the face of it, is guilty as hell of vehicular homicide, he will not be held accountable. 100% guarantee he will not be held accountable for killing two people. You know why? Because he's a cop and he can murder whoever he wants. He can murder whoever he feels like for whatever reason he feels like. He can kill whoever he wants, however he wants. What's your excuse? You're speeding. Why do you turn off your siren and lights that are already on as you speed through a busy intersection? Oh, well, it doesn't matter. You know why? Because I'm the only one who's going to ask. There's no court of law going to ask. Nobody cares with any authority to do anything about it. He'll have a 2-week paid vacation, and then he'll be back at work killing whoever he feels like. Just like this cop, who extorted. He raped this woman repeatedly, is what he did. Florida sheriff's deputy was arrested Monday. Arrested? Was he in another jurisdiction or something? What happened with that? After he was accused of allowing a woman to avoid arrest in exchange for oral sex. Ted Arboleda, a Broward County sheriff's deputy, was charged with unlawful compensation or reward for official behavior. A second-degree felony? Oh, come on, they're going to drop the charges, right? They charged a cop with a felony for something? She had a little bit of weed? And well, it says here she offered to him and he accepted, so I don't know, assuming that's true. It's kind of still though. I guess the headline was a bit overblown. Made it sound like more of a rape. Well, it was her idea. Well, at least that's according to him. I don't know if she concedes to those facts. But this cop though, Colorado family stunned. Cop breaks in, fatally shoots man in back, and, quote, no one knows why. Colorado family said it was stunned over the weekend when an officer broke down their door and fatally shot one of the residents in the back without explanation. Sarah Lindenmuth, told KRDO that a Rocky Ford police officer forced down the door to their home sometime after her brother-in-law, 27-year-old Jacques, came home around 2 a.m. Sunday morning. She recalled that the two men started shouting at each other. He was standing next to his mom. His back turned toward the officer. Then he shot him twice in the back, and then pepper sprayed him. Then they handcuffed his fiance for reasons I don't know why. And the mom went to call the cops, and the cop took her phone and threw it against the wall. He just showed up, she insisted. No one knows why he just showed up. It just all happened unexpectedly. Jaquez's fiance, Mariah, told KKTV that he had been out late because he was helping a friend babysit. She said she was asleep when she heard the gunshots. Came out gunshots firing. Found my fiancé on the floor. He couldn't breathe, she explained. The Colorado Bureau of Investigation is going to take good care of us now and figure out what happened. The officer has been identified as James Ashby. He's been placed on administrative leave, which means paid vacation, pending the outcome of the investigation. All right, well, what do you think are the chances that he will be prosecuted for killing this unarmed man in his house? I'm thinking there's zero chance. It's possible that there's zero chance. I don't know. What do you guys think? 1%? I don't know. This other guy got charged with a felony for accepting a little... I mean, he was going after her for a non-crime in the first place, so really he was extorting it out of her. Put her in a desperate situation. It's not quite like it's her free will. Only within certain confines was she deciding. But still. You know, if only he had blown her head off after getting head, then he would have immunity. Then everything would be all right. Mm-hmm. There's no rhyme or reason. They say there's no excuse for ignorance of the law and all that, but it doesn't seem to make any consistent sense to me. All right, and then I guess we'll do Israel news after the break, but I wanted to mention here that Iran's president says a nuclear deal with the West is certain. Hassani said on Monday he believed it will be achieved by the November 24th deadline. We have reached consensus on generalities. There are only the fine details to be worked out. whether we would reach an agreement within the next 40 days, if the time will be extended, etc., the president told his people in a direct broadcast to the Iranian people on TV. The details are important too, but we can do it, and all positivity from him, so that's good. Just don't ally with him in Iraq. Oh, too late.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. darrenscoffee.com.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. Wrapping up here for the day. Sorry I didn't have any guests for you, man. I guess I didn't really try that hard. I kind of tried. I tried to get Patrick Coburn, and I tried to get Matthew Ho, and I tried to get Anand Gopal and Max Blumenthal. That's pretty good. It's just that it didn't work. So, anyway. I'm pretty great for listening to, though. Here I got my Israel section. Holy crap, can you believe this? In a 274-12 vote, the British Parliament overwhelmingly passed a symbolic resolution expressing its support for the government to recognize Palestinian statehood. Now, I clicked on the Independent here from Jason's article because this is the House of Commons? Or this is both the House of Lords too? Do they not have the House of Lords anymore? What happened with that? I don't keep up with British politics all that good because I'm from Texas. It must have just been the House of Commons, right? Does anybody in the chat room know? I'm looking at this article and I don't see it say either way. Oh, here we go. Huh? I guess it's just in the House of Commons because I don't see anything about the House of Lords here. I don't know. Is that right? Anyway, still though, in a 274 to 12 vote, the British Parliament overwhelmingly passed a symbolic resolution expressing its support for governmental recognition of Palestinian statehood. The resolution urges the Cameron government to recognize Palestine as part of an effort to contribute to a two-state solution in the region. A resolution was introduced and heavily pushed by the Labour Party, which has raised speculation that a future Labour PM might follow through on the recognition, though Cameron is not expected to do so. The vote was angrily condemned by the Israeli embassy as a, quote, troubling message to the Palestinians that they can achieve statehood without an advanced Israeli approval. Advance, he means. The PLO, naturally, cheered the move, saying that while it supports talks with Israel, it doesn't believe the right to self-determination should have to be granted to it by the Israeli government. Sweden also recognized the state of Palestine, earlier this month, which fueled similar outrage from Israel. The move reflected growing EU sentiment toward Palestinian statehood and toward the Israeli government. Because there's no pretending anymore. I mean, for a while, you can understand from the point of view of these Western politicians. Okay, so the game is we pretend that someday. But now, there's no more pretending. Now, it's obvious that it's a damn lie. And that unless Europe and America make Israel give up the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip, and Golan Heights or whatever, I don't know. People don't make as much of a big deal about the Golan Heights, I don't know why. But anyway, certainly unless they give up the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem, unless the Americans and the Europeans make them, they won't. That's the point. Judea and Samaria is what they call the West Bank. That's in the Likud party's charter. That is Israel to them. Netanyahu said himself at that speech that we don't recognize any right of the Palestinians to that land. He didn't say it that way. He said, well, there's a Jewish right to this land because it's in the Bible. That's what he literally said. Because there's a Bible from 2,500, 3,000 years ago, that means that Jews own all of this land now, including the West Bank and East Jerusalem. And if they let the Palestinians have a state there at all, in any sense, it'll only be because the Israelis feel nice and feel like it. Otherwise, no. Does anyone else other than Jews have a right to that land, according to Netanyahu? No. It's part of Israel. It's not the occupied West Bank. It's not Palestine to Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister and leader of a coalition of all guys who are to the right of him on this issue. And so after the last Kerry attempted, botched, of course, by the Israelis, peace talks, after the last failure, and after the UN General Assembly has already voted to recognize them, and they've begun to join some of the international institutions and so forth as an independent state, people are fed up. It's amazing. I don't know. I guess they don't have quite as much of an Israel lobby in the UK as they do in America these days. Can you believe those numbers? 274-12? Can you imagine that happening in the U.S. House of Representatives? Proportions like that on this issue, but it's an extremely important one. I mean, assuming if you do that Palestinians are human, then yeah, it's important. Really important. The Israelis' unending occupation and persecution of millions of Palestinians. Yeah, it matters a lot. And even if you don't think they're humans, you gotta recognize that other people do think they're humans correctly, you know. It's not really a matter of opinion, but anyway, say you're a conservative and you don't recognize their rights. Others do, and others get really pissed off that the Israelis are always flying American F-16s and shooting American M-16s when they're killing Palestinians. That's why they knocked the towers down. That's what knocked the towers down. What a bunch of thermite and a bunch of crap. Give me a break. It was American support for Israel in their occupations of southern Lebanon and Palestine. That's what Mohammed Atta said, the ringleader hijacker. What was sticking in his craw? Israel in Palestine. In fact, according to Lawrence Wright, he signed his last will and testament as he joined up the fight on the other side in 1996 during Operation Grapes of Wrath. When the Israelis were occupying southern Lebanon and massacring Shia. And according to Terry McDermott, who wrote the book Perfect Soldiers, Mohammed Atta and Ramzi bin al-Shib in the Hamburg cell of 9/11 hijackers, they would just sit around every day talking about how much they hated Israel and how Americans should have to pay for it. And that was why they agreed with bin Laden that it was the Americans who should be targeted, because they're the ones who are behind all this. Why, just look at Palestine, for example. Well, what about Building 7? How come Building 7 fell down? Building 7 fell down because America supported Israel's mass murder of the Palestinians all day, which made a lot of people angry, so they joined up a war against America, hijacked some planes, and crashed them into some towers, one of which crashed into Building 7 because of what Israel was doing to the Palestinians. Understand? It's such a mystery. Gee, those planes came out of the clear blue sky. I wonder what could explain it other than my imagination. No, they said what it was. It was American support for Israel's unending massacres of men, women, and children in Palestine. Their brutal oppression, suppression, and murder. And torture. Kidnapping of little and torture of little kids. You can read Israeli peace groups have documented all this. Bet Salem, is that how you pronounce it? They're the ones who are out front documenting the Israeli government's torture of Palestinian children. Children. Not teenagers. Technically children, but children. Children. The kind that still get the kids' menu. You know, if they had anything to eat. Children. That's the answer to the mystery of September 11th. You can go and read bin Laden's initial fatwa on America in 1996. Two-thirds of it is about Operation Grapes of Wrath. Israel and Lebanon. How come your blood is blood, but our blood is water? He asked. We'll show you, he asserted. It's in there. You can go read it at the PBS website. Bin Laden's Declaration of War Against the Jews and Crusaders, the Americans Occupying the Land of the Two Holy Places. America's own little West Bank there in Iraq. Anyway, that's how those things go. And then, this is important. Israel sidelined as nations pledge $5.4 billion to rebuild Gaza. And that is also Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. That's the EU. And the Israelis are spitting mad. But that's just more of this. Even the European governments, political leaders, are absolutely fed up with this. And are now outright opposing Israeli policies in real ways. Well, I don't know, pseudo real ways, better than before. And one more. Check this out. Obama took Netanyahu's threats to attack Iran seriously, quote unquote. It's in Haaretz. Quotes from the memoirs of Hillary Clinton and Leon Panetta. I gotta go. I'll see y'all tomorrow.